David Ikove is a professor at the University of Tennessee's Engineering and Computer Science Department. He's an internationally recognized expert on arson. I spoke to him by Skype, and because he might be called in to work on the Tennessee fire investigation, he couldn't talk about any cases, but Ikove did share some of his research into the mind and motivation of a fire setter.
The research that we did was guided by the top psychologists, psychiatrists, and criminologists in the field. And we did basically a motive-based analysis of cases that we actually worked, as well as peer-reviewed literature and prison interviews of convicted arsonists. And these, particularly the ones we were looking at, were serial arsonists. But the important thing is that in determining motive, it became what we realized, it became essential in looking at fire scenes. And we actually had indicators that we tied back to the offenders. We ended up with our analysis, we came up with six motive groups that we could define statistically, as well as by case histories, as to different classifications. And the motive classifications were vandalism, excitement, revenge, crime concealment, and extremism or terrorism. So those are the six areas. The most frequent area we had, though, as we saw, what had to deal with the vandalism, motivated fire setters. There was an old fire chief that used to tell us the ashes can speak, but you got to get your ear down next to them to listen. So what we were essentially looking at is the behavior of the arsonist and what clues they left at the scenes, actually down to what they targeted. So, for example, vandalism-motivated arsonists were basically they were setting fires to what we determined to be either malicious or mischievous fire setting. These are typically were juveniles. We even looked at temporal relationships, time of day, day of the week. So these are usually during the daytime in the school year. But the actual crime scenes reflected impulsive, disorganized acts. And they also used materials that were present, and they also, in a lot of cases, live by the fire scenes of their targets. And typically, they were looking at the targets were grass, brush, wildlands, vegetation, and some residential areas. The interesting aspect from vandalism motivated arsonists is the fact that these were juveniles, and typically we would see two or more individuals involved, which is of interest. The second area, though, we were looking at, you were talking about structures, was the area of the excitement-motivated arsonist. Those are individuals that craved excitement. They rarely intended to harm people, and this is based upon the cases that we studied, as well as the prison interviews. They, too, looked at the vegetation and trash, but they gravitated to unoccupied properties, garages. And also they were setting fires in which they had a clear vantage point. And in some cases, they actually surveilled the responding fire apparatus, as well as in some cases, the investigators to see what was happening. They were those fires are typically set in the afternoon or evening, and these are either juveniles or young adults. But the interesting thing that occurred on the crime scene is that they could care less, basically, in some cases, about fingerprints. They left time-delayed mechanisms, and they also used available materials that were at the scene. For example, garages are a typical target for the excitement-motivated fire setter because all the materials that he or she might need are there at the scene. The third type of arson motive that we looked at had to do with revenge, and that dealt with a little bit more life-threatening event because those were fires that were set for retaliation for some injustice. And in the cases we looked at, they were injustices that were either real or imagined. So the important thing was that we came out of it was to study the victimology, not only the victim, but also the targets. And so we're looking at personal effects, residences, vehicles, and properties like those. The interesting thing was that they used on-hand materials or flammable liquids. But in these types of cases, with the revenge-motivated fire setting, we looked at more of vengeance as the key in this case. And where a half a gallon or a gallon of gasoline would do just fine in setting the fire, they'd end up using 5 or 10 gallons of gasoline. as well as in some cases leave some type of communique. The offenders that we saw in this category were adults, and in some cases they were under the influence of alcohol and or drugs. So that was the case that we really were concerned about, especially in revenge motivated fire setting. The next area that we looked at, topology of motives, had to deal with crime concealment. And those were in cases in which the fire was set as a secondary or a collateral crime to cover up another crime. For example, homicides, burglaries, auto thefts, records that an individual wanted to have destroyed. The fire was the secondary, but it became the tool used by the arsonist. And those times we were looking at the temporal relationships. They were in the evenings or the early morning hours. And again, like I mentioned, the adults in these cases frequently used drugs or alcohol. But of interest was is that in checking the criminal history records, there were significant contacts prior with law enforcement. The next area we looked at were the profit motivated arsonists, and basically these were fires that were set with the purpose of achieving some type of material gain, and this was the gain would have been directly or indirectly in which they would have. So the type of targets we looked at were residential properties, commercial properties, boats, vehicles, recreational vehicles, for example. And in looking at the crime scenes, these arsonists were very organized. There were The events were well planned. They used a methodical approach. And again, in this type of case, they used excessive accelerants with multiple points of origin. And that's of importance to fire investigators who make the assessment of where the fire or fires may have been started within a structure. So in these types of cases, these were in the evening or early mornings, and the offenders in a majority of the time were adult offenders. And like I said, in the profit-motivated area, they were achieving some type of material gain, either directly or indirectly. The last area was in extremism or terrorism, and that's an area that is not frequently reported, but in areas where they might have political ramifications from it. For example, abortion clinic fire setters or bombers would have been included in that category. We caution, though, investigators that even though they have this same fire setter is involved in multiple incidents, that the that no two criminal acts are or methods of the offenders are identical. And so in a lot of these cases, the serial arsonists became more cunning, and they learned from their historical fire setting experience. It really drove home a lot of this area. The classification system has been adopted. It's now part of the National Fire Protection Association's Guide for Fire and Explosion Investigations, and so that's a part and parcel to the toolkit of what normal fire investigators have on a daily basis.
You mentioned something a moment ago, and that there was someone that said, "Put your ear to the ground, the ashes will speak, will tell you things." A wildland fire or something out in nature has got to be challenging. What are the challenges of fire investigation out in the forest?
The forest fire investigators, that technique is not as well taught to fire investigators because a majority of the investigators are in the urban areas. Rural fire investigation is a lot different. Some of the fire patterns that would have been thought obvious are not that obvious. Also, with the amount of territory that is required to be searched, especially if there's an incendiary device or a fire set in multiple locations, it's extremely hard to do that. I've seen recently the use of drones by fire investigators to get a good overall view of the scene and assist in tracking back where the area of origin was of the fire. Also, the rural fire investigation must leverage a good understanding of fire dynamics, because what we're talking about are some complex developments of fire, whether it be on the ground or within the brush or curtilage of the forest area. So these types of fires are very hard to investigate, and there's a cadre of some very experienced investigators, but they're few and far between in comparison to the urban fire investigations.
The arson profiles that you mentioned, is there a profile that fits somebody that would target wildland forest fires?
Yeah, and but the interesting thing is that it cuts across the strata of the six classifications for arson, for the motives for arson, and that's the hard part of of looking at the science of what's happened. So, in some cases, and it's not very well studied, and that's the problem with the field, is that we have more data regarding the urban fire setter than we do the rural fire setter. And that's an area of concern that a lot of us have had in doing that. In the studies that we did at the FBI and the prison interviews, there were very few wildland fire setters that came up in that population. But as I mentioned, fire setting in the rural environment can basically cut across the strata of all six of the motive classifications.
You also mentioned in your research the difference between a serial arsonist and a spree arsonist. Can you elaborate? What's that?
The serial arsonist typically has a cooling off period. That is, they may set one fire, and there'll be a period of time in which they backed off before they set the next fire. A spree arsonist would set several fires without the cooling off period. That is, within the they may set a fire and then continue setting additional fires within a close time period, say, for example, 4 to 6 hours. So those are the ones that really tax the investigators as well as the fire suppression personnel. Especially in a wildland environment, one fire may overcome another one, which may obliterate some of the fire patterns that were traditionally used. It becomes a very complex investigation. And in investigations, especially in fire investigations, it's driven by the scientific method. And so you may have multiple hypotheses of what individuals may have considered had happened, or you may have conflicting information. So all of these things have to be evaluated. And computer fire modeling is one tool that's being used in the field now to make these type of determinations.
I want to go back to motives of arsonists. And you talk, I think, in one of the papers that you sent me, vandalism fires set by juveniles, and it's something that teens can grow out of. And then there are some who obviously the habit does not drop off. Can you tell me what your research showed on that?
The research showed that some of them graduated from vandalism motivated fire setters to the area of excitement. The break point appears to be the age of 18. If you look at the national statistics by the Federal Bureau of Investigation from the Uniform Crime Reports, half the arrests in the United States typically are juveniles. And so it's the graduation from the vandalism motivated group to the excitement motivated arsonist that really bothers us. And those are the individuals that potentially can harm individuals because their fires become progressively more dangerous as they set. They basically graduate from vegetation and trash fires to unoccupied structures, such as garages, abandoned buildings, and such. And after those, in some cases, they actually progress to occupied structures, and that's where the threat becomes. Another aspect of it is if the investigators aren't thoroughly trained in doing crime scene assessments, as well as in looking at the patterns set by these excitement motivated arsonists, they may miss the opportunity to detect and predict their behavior, as well as to provide some type of intervention strategies. And those are the cases that we saw over the period of years become more increasingly threatening as well as more visible. and in the in not only in the media, but also in the community, becoming outraged at the fact that fire and law enforcement officials were unable to apprehend the arsonist or that may be the arsonist or arsonists that may be responsible for the those types of fires. And those are the serial fire setters that we are most concerned about because of their increasing threatening due to targets of their fires.
And there are some, and you mentioned this earlier, who may be on the scene. We've even heard who report the fire that they set. Has your work shown any insight into that sort of behavior that almost seems daring?
There are cases that we studied and that do exist in which especially excitement motivated arsonists will actually surveil the activities. And in one case that I looked at, the arsonist not only called in the fire but also photographed the responding apparatus, the fire suppression personnel, and surveilled the how the investigators processed the scene. And in that one case, actually kept notes about their events. In one case that we looked at, the arsonist actually, after successfully evading detection, started writing letters and calling the fire chief and taunting him. So those are some interesting types of cases that anecdotally provide a much better insight into what's happening. But surveilling the scene, watching the process of what's going on, and in some cases, returning to the scene later. There's one case that we looked at. It's a self-reported case that we've actually put in our textbooks involving a woman who set fires, and she explained the gratification that she got from it, but also the fact that she returned to the scenes, that anniversaries were important, and became very exacting about the insight into what a compulsive serial fire setter may experience. Like I said, anecdotally in the history, in the peer-reviewed literature, these cases do occur, but they're infrequent. On the serial arsonists, it's a complex problem. There's a lot more science behind it than we've seen in the past, and those are areas for future. Future work, peer-reviewed work by scientists, engineers, and investigators.